Welcome to the Subscription League, a podcast by Purchasly. Listen to what's working in subscription apps. In each episode, we invite leaders of the app industry who are mastering the subscription model for mobile apps. To learn more about subscriptions, head to subscriptionleague.com. Let's get started. Welcome to the show, everybody. Today, I'm joined by Jeff and Ekaterina Gemsregler. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Great. Happy to be here.
Yes, we're glad to have you. So, Ekaterina, you're leading a marketing department at MIMO and also used to lead the growth department over there. Can you tell us a bit more about what MIMO is and what your responsibilities are?
Yeah, of course. MIMO is started as a coding app a while ago and actually to this point grew to a very successful product with millions of users. And in a couple of the last years, in addition to having the mobile apps and working on those, we also launched our own bootcamp, MIMO Bootcamp, and also the web version of our product, which is currently in beta. And my role so far has been leading the marketing department. And for a long time, I was also the product manager in the growth department, working with the engineers and the designer on multiple growth levers. Currently, I'm on the maternity leave, but I'm already looking forward to coming back in summer to MIMO and to keep contributing to growth and marketing.
Wow. So you're saying that we are interviewing you during your maternity leave. We didn't know that. And congratulations, on by the way.
Thanks. It's not very public, but yes.
That's awesome.
It's good. Thanks. It's a little amount of work and thanks for sharing.
So you've also become a mentor and consultant and you've launched your own course on growing mobile app. And I don't know, I'm assuming you started that before the maternity leave, but never know, maybe that was your chance there. What motivated you to start that course?
It was a very gradual process. So of course, not all of these roles are happening simultaneously. Mm. I started with mentoring a couple of years ago. And after, I don't know, 15, you do 15, 25, 50 sessions, you realize and start seeing some patterns and start to realize that there are the same questions that you keep answering over and over again. Because also most often I was approached by founders of mobile startups. And of course, you start thinking, how can you possibly optimize that? How you can scale that? Because your time is not really scalable, but your expertise and some product, if you built it on top of it, might be. So this gave me the idea because I was also documenting in a lot of detail a lot of things I've been learning throughout my whole career. So while I was already on the maternity leave at the end of my pregnancy, I had a couple of months to actually reflect on everything. And to think how I can structure what I know, what I've learned, all of my experiences, and pack it into a course. Mm-hmm. And it was also at the same time when I got accepted to the Maven Accelerator for course building. So I thought it's a sign that finally this couple of months would be the opportunity for me to do that. And the good thing about it was that my daughter was to be born soon. So I knew that even if nothing works out, even if it will be a complete failure, I will soon have completely other spectrum of things to worry about. So I'm not going to worry about that way too much and contemplate on that. That's why I just decided to do it and launched my first cohort end of November. And I launched the second one already end of February, like a couple of months later.
Yeah, it's really fun when all these personal and professional projects just boot at the same time or born at the same time. I don't know, Olivier, if you experienced the same, but for Purchasly, it was pretty much the same for me. Like my daughter was born when we founded Purchasly, and it's really nice when all these pieces like come up together at the same time. It's really stressful, but though it's the energy that you get from all these projects, they just fuel everything. So it's great.
That's good. On my end, we actually decided to move from the US back to France when my daughter was born, and then my son was born in France afterwards. So it was more like all those personal projects and work change, obviously, at the same time. It was like, okay, screw this life. We're going to do something totally different.
Total reboot. Like, yes. Let's change everything at the same time.
Yes.
It's just congrats, Ekaterina.
Yeah, sounds like a great time to do everything at once. No, but it just happens that these opportunities happen to come at the same time. And what are you going to do?
Yeah. So while at MIMO, you've worked to grow their app, promote their website and bootcamp. I'm sure that's been a lot of work. Like, can you tell us more about the challenges that this presented?
Yeah, Of course, yeah, it was a lot of work in the last year, because initially one thing is when you're working on just one product when it comes to marketing and growing it. And another thing is that suddenly there are two new products in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. Your portfolio is changing, your audience should keep expanding, and you should start acquiring new users. And also another big challenge is how do you actually figure out how to sell the new products? So the go-to-market strategies, the communication strategies, even the positioning had to slightly change. Mm-hmm. Because for a very long time at Mimo, we had this perception by our users that our product is fun and really easy. And this easy is somewhat of a keyword for us, because this was one of our biggest USPs, that everyone can learn to code, mm-hmm. that everyone can get the confidence that they can do that. So we had to slightly also start giving users the idea that we are also very professional, that we have plenty of deep content, and that we can get the person to job readiness as well. So apart from being easy and fun, we also wanted to look more professional in this space, mm-hmm. Because the bootcamp would require that. Otherwise, nobody would sign up for it. So figuring out this balance was really an interesting challenge. And another challenge was that my team before, the marketing team, was mostly focusing on growth marketing. Because for mobile apps, which already was at the post-product market fit stage, it was necessary, of course. Like, growth marketing was our everything. And I was really lucky to have the team on which I can count to keep doing that, while I personally could focus a bit more on product marketing, contribute a bit to the brand marketing strategy, to also the current rebranding project that we are starting to roll out mm-hmm. in phases these days. So yeah, but figuring out the new audiences, how to sell the product with the completely different pricing was a much longer decision making and conversion cycle. Like, this was challenging.
Can you actually tell us a little bit, you know, you say the audiences are different. Can you tell us a bit more about how they're different? Like, what was the old audience? What is the new one? And what challenge specifically did that present to get to that new audience, I guess, or sell to that new audience?
Yes. So initially, our apps is the acquisition point, so to say, for also the bootcamp as well, because a lot of promotions of the bootcamp are happening mm-hmm. inside the product, and they go through lifecycle marketing to our existing audience as well, to our existing users. And the difference is that users typically install Mimo when they want to get a quick start into coding. They want to see if in any way they actually can do it and gain some confidence in that, because mm-hmm. There are a lot of beliefs and that are deeply rooted, that everybody thinks that coding is difficult, it's only for math wizards, you have to be great at XYZ, like especially math, to be able to do that. So our app is designed to make it very easy in a gamified and rewarding way to make these first steps. However, when it comes to the bootcamp, this is already the audience which has a little bit of experience in web development, probably has been through a certain portion of our web development path, and wants to change a career and pivot to web development. So, of course, like, the requirements that this audience has when it comes to the product and its quality is very different. Our teaching methods are very different there as well. It's like a proper bootcamp with instructors, mm-hmm. with a community, with a lot of challenging tasks and projects that are designed to help you build a portfolio to actually find a job in the end.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me on your webpage was for the bootcamp was, you know, a job, new job guaranteed in 6 months or something along those lines. I was like, nice.
Yeah, well, I think like we already have more than 100 graduates, and also the job placement rates are quite good for the mm-hmm. bootcamp. That's why we just keep going.
Yeah, nice. And so I'm sure launching and growing this app, you probably did a lot of experimentation. Are there any takeaway you could share with us?
Yeah, I can share a couple. I think the first one would be that it actually makes a lot of sense to invest some time and energy into figuring out some product marketing basics and brand marketing basics before investing into paid user acquisition. That was the reason why we have not done it at scale for the bootcamp, because we really wanted to make sure that we can position it properly and then deliver on the promises that we have. So scaling user acquisition right away for the new product is something I mm-hmm. would not do, and we did not do it. Another thing, yeah.
Did you guys went with like organic, or did you also have like paid acquisition, but kind of low level until you figured out everything?
We went for trying to upsell it first to our existing audience, which already is familiar with our products. So there were a lot of promotions that we had to place in the app. Like the idea behind it was that we have to make users, first of all, aware that the new product is there. And this worked out quite good, but conversions themselves did not naturally follow. They did not happen. So we had to do also a lot of experimentation there with the growth team, trying to figure out, okay, what are the right moments to place these promotions in order to not cannibalize everything, to not cannibalize our existing revenue from the pro subscriptions that we also have, and also to not overwhelm users too much. So to find this correct audience and the right moments to which we go in order to upsell the new product, this was how it started. This is where we were getting most of the bootcamp applicants as well.
Do you, in your user journey, do you believe that your users taking the course will be the one that are highly active and at the end they will be converting to this new offer that you're launching, or will they live alongside with your existing users and it's totally different people?
We will, at least I believe at the moment that this will be just a small portion of the current audience that will be converting to the bootcamp, simply for a reason that our segments are very different in the product, and the motives and the jobs to be done, so to say, for which our product is hired, like the apps, differ a lot. They vary a lot per segment. We, for example, have casual learners as well as the really motivated learners who want to get a new job. And I think, from what I remember, about 40 or 50% of our learners actually start with the app and want to become developers, because we have this kind of question in the onboarding, asking them specifically why they're learning to code. And you can imagine that because also of a much higher price tag and because of a much higher level of commitment that these users have to make, this audience is just much smaller in size compared to our whole user base, because a lot of them want to learn to code because it's they think it's a cool new hobby, because they want to keep their brain active, because they want to get a promotion at work. So, for example, this upskilling part of the audience is exactly our focus at the moment either. We are specifically focusing on those who want to make a switch and to change a career.
Okay. So you rely on your acquisition for your existing product, and then you pick the right users to drive them to this specific offer that is highly valuable for both of you.
Yeah, I consider it quite an interesting way how our business model has developed, because I think in the end, there are lots of subscription apps out there. And at some point, everybody starts struggling with the lifetime values that are kept, so to say, because of even if you like, the good thing about it is that in subscription apps, the lifetime values are very easy to predict. So you more or less know quite early in your journey, like after a year or so, what might be the your lifetime values based on the renewals and everything. But they have this gap, which is hard to overcome. So the bootcamp was launched in an attempt to actually significantly increase the lifetime values in the end.
You mentioned that you asked the user, why do they want to learn to code? Were there any reason that were surprising to you?
No, I would say nothing very surprising. A lot of users want to build their dream projects or something they always wanted. And I would say that this is a very typical story. If we ask users by emails, surveys, or interviews, it's a very common reply that when they say that they actually did a bit of coding at school or university, and then they got a job in a completely different field, and now they're trying to get back to it because they have this idea that they want to bring to life. I think this is very common, but for most of them, this is more of a hobby, an additional project. Yeah, something new to learn, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah. I went through the typical university route, so it's fascinating to me to see that, you know, you can learn coding through an app nowadays, and I'm like, would I have enjoyed that at the time, and would have helped me move faster anyway. So you've ran some experiments, have you told us, but you're also managing the team that was running some experiments. I'm sure it's, you know, a different story when you have to manage that team and help them run their experiments. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, we I can't, of course, take the credit for building the experimentation culture at MIMO. It was the whole team and the whole leadership team and multiple product managers. We all tried to improve it to whatever extent we can. So there were different problems along the way, and I think they're present in every company and in every startup. So first, it was very hard to increase a number of high quality ideas for the experiments that we can run and implement right away. That's why also way before my time at MIMO, there was introduced a new format borrowed from Basecamp called a pitch. This was a very simple template, like a document that everybody could fill in and submit, and the relevant product manager would review and give feedback on that. So I think making this pitching process public and available to every team member helped us a lot to come up with a lot of great experiment ideas for the backlog. And however, after some time, we also realized that our colleagues and coworkers are not always getting the right feedback at the right time. They submit great ideas, but not necessarily get updated on what's happening after. So that's why we also had to make some kind of a hard deadline for every PM to review the ideas on time and then to give feedback on those, to prioritize them accordingly if we decide to work on them. Mm-hmm. This really helped. At least it was not in any way discouraging for our coworkers and would help to keep the innovation going. And often it was also clear that the speech template, even though it's fairly straightforward, it has a part where you have to explain why this would be the problem you have to tackle, why this would be something to invest time and resources into, which basically means that you have to describe the potential impact that the new feature or this experiment is going to make. This should be quite a significant impact to the bottom line in order for the idea to come to life. And this was not so easy for every team member to do because not everybody is extremely fluent in data analysis or our product analytics to actually say increasing the conversion from X to Y is going to bring us that much in revenue or improve this another metric, like the bottom line to a certain percentage. That's why we additionally also introduced a new format, which was just called an idea. This could be literally anything you saw from a competitor, any insight you got from a user, which would not require everyone to invest too much time into polishing these details of, okay, what is it actually gonna bring? Because this would be up to the product manager at this point to figure it out and prioritize accordingly. And yeah, other problems were usually problems and challenges were revolving around, as it's called often, the local maximum problem, because we would, for example, take a paywall or take a certain screen, make some experiments, get significant returns and keep iterating on those. And then you would make up to 5 or 6 versions of the same paywall, like one after the other, because you want to keep iterating on your successes. At some point, you hit a point of diminishing returns, which usually means that you have reached this local maximum and you have to switch to try to find the global one again and to find an idea of something random to change and to start experimenting again. And what I learned in the last years is that the best way to find this random, random idea just to implement is usually from user insights. Uh-huh. It can be user interviews when you suddenly get some great idea and some cool insight. It can be user surveys. It can be even as simple as a user review, which can give you an idea of what this random can be. For example, I remember a user interview with one of our core users, as we call it. So users who have no experience, but want to become professional developers. And several of them were mentioning that it's still not clear to them what's the difference between the free version and the paid version of the product, for example. So this, of course, naturally makes you think about some kind of a comparison table, but how do you integrate it into the flow, into the upgrade flow? Is it really going to make an improvement? So we tried and experimented with that. I don't think it made a significant difference, but the insight was there. Mm-hmm. It was not clear to users what's the difference. That's why they did not see why they need to upgrade. So communicating this better, communicating what's the value of the pro version also was a huge insight for marketing, like that we are clearly not doing it too good at the moment.
And that goes back to show how important it is to talk to your customer, because again, that's how you're going to find the big bets that you can make to try to thwart the local maxima.
Yeah, and I can also add that you are often expected to move fast, and at the same time, you are expected to bring, like, to make these big bets and to bring some huge output. And this was, I think, it's not often easy to take the time to find the time to actually dedicate a certain portion of the quarter with strong KPIs that you have, with the ambitious goals that you have, and to spend it on user research. That's why it's just really important to manage the expectations, to also to manage up properly, to communicate with the leadership team that, okay, we're going to take this amount of time because we want to decrease uncertainty first, and then we're going to work on something big.
Okay. We're going to change tack a little bit. We've talked about your work at Memo, but you've, as you said at the beginning, you've launched a course on how to grow user base and revenue. And what I noticed is the tagline is take a structured full funnel approach to growing your app's user base and revenue. Why did you choose that tagline?
Well, I think the keywords here for me are structured and full funnel, because even though at some points, like we already discussed, being random and trying something random is cool, I mean, it still should be based on the user insights. I'm overall a big fan of planning and the structured approach to doing things. And another keyword here is full funnel, because I, again, don't believe that just improving monetization or just improving acquisition might necessarily make a huge impact. Like revenue is an output, and there are multiple inputs to it. It can be happening like a lot of lots of growth levers across the whole funnel. That's why starting from improving your organic acquisition with App Store optimization and finishing with optimizing your paywalls, like it has to be structured, and you have to find these different ideas of which you can estimate on the bottom line and actually see what is more likely to bring results in the short and long term, hence the tagline.
Yeah, that's really something that we truly believe in at Purchasly, for sure. You want to improve your revenue, but you want also to make sure that it won't have an impact on anything else in your app, like the retention or your free users. Like, it's great to, of course, showing more and more people will drive more conversion, but you also might lose some people in the process. And of course, the conversion can be good, but it needs to be compared to your acquisition cost, for example. And the return on ad spend is really something that is achievable only if you have that full funnel from acquisition to conversion, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. As soon as you switch to like higher level goals, like lifetime values, customer acquisition costs, which multiple departments are typically responsible for, then you really need to have a department or a person or an approach that is overall like taking into account the whole funnel. Even when we analyze the experiments and propose them, we also have the template where everyone needs to define the primary success metrics, the secondary success metrics, but also potentially the guardrail metrics, so to say, and potential trade-offs, because clearly increasing, even if you increase the conversion, there is a risk that's going to increase the amount of refunds that you're going to get. It's going to probably sometimes decrease the quality of your customers, and you might expect low renewals in the future. So all of this, I agree, have to be taken into account.
Yeah, or putting free features into the premium plan might reduce your ratings on the store and so your ASO, et cetera, et cetera. So we know that everything is tied up together, and you need to find the better mix. So yeah, that's really, really helpful to have this full vision, full funnel vision.
Yeah, totally.
And so you've already had two, or I guess the second cohort is in your course now. You've already had one before, and you're already advising a little bit before. What are some of the mistakes that you've seen founders do when trying to grow their user base and revenue?
I think the most common one is that somehow segmentation is not a very popular tactic that is used by the startups, at least not at the beginning of their journey. for mobile apps. I don't yet know why. I think it's somehow also connected to the lack of product analytics, analytical tools, and SDKs that get integrated into the products at the beginning. But usually it's somewhat of a revelation when I hold a workshop and show that the users can be segmented across, there might be multiple breakdowns of the user base. This is usually a revelation to a lot of people, like in my course and also in my consultancy work. So I would definitely usually advise to even do this at the pre-product market fit stage, because we also know that even if you don't think that you already have the PMF for your whole user base, you might definitely already have it for some of your segments. So figuring out what the segments are and trying to get more of this pretty much can be a faster way to success. And another thing is that the monetization opportunities differ a lot based on the geo, based on the platform, based on the use case and users' motivation. So no matter if we're talking about language learning or code learning apps or fitness apps, users, as I also mentioned at the beginning, are trying to solve completely different spectrum of problems with it. And all of this impacts the communication, the messaging that you're going to use in your onboarding and in your emails, in your lifecycle marketing overall, in your advertising activities. So not to mention that sometimes you might need to come up with different monetization strategies for each of these segments. And yeah, so I would say segmentation is more or less key to understanding your users and trying to convert them as well. And another thing is also not talking to users and customers is a big issue that I also see across multiple companies. I myself am an introvert. That's why I can totally understand the anxiety it gives and the reluctance sometimes when it comes to talking to your user base. But it's unfortunately such a critical part. And it's essential to do that. Instead, I see a lot of founders looking at the competition, which is also a valid strategy to some extent, but still nothing is going to substitute the great user research. And another belief that the founders often have is that user research has to be massive, expensive, and tedious and taking a long time. Which is not exactly true, because it can be as simple as just analyzing your user reviews. And especially now with ChatGPT, you can do it super easily and get so many interesting insights right away in front of you, super fast.
Interesting. You have to tell us how.
I think I'm actually a fan of a platform that is called VexPower. They have a course, I think it's even free, about using AI to automatically analyze your user reviews. And I think it's fairly easy indeed to keep track of that. Also, launching a couple of user surveys in your product and then interviewing a couple of the respondents who agreed to it might already give you a ton of insights before you also start seeing some patterns. Mm-hmm. So doesn't it have to be long or complicated or expensive?
Yeah, that's totally agree. And an independent or an indie dev in the early days of the App Store for a TypeSheet application, I won't name because it doesn't exist anymore. I remember that the reviews were really source of inspiration, like for the features, etc. But there were also another one, which was the support. All the emails that you get, even as an indie dev, you get all these emails, etc. So it's a great opportunity when you reply to the email to get like 5 ratings. Like if you like our application, give us a 5 rating, because that helps us a lot. But it's also a great way of getting direct feedback from customers that are willing to speak to you. And it's I think it's a great stuff. There's also another one that I caught from Lenny Raczycki. It's from the CEO of Profitwell, who tells that, well, when you unsubscribe from a product, you often ask, why do you unsubscribe? But it's very rare that you ask the people, like, what did you like in the product? And I think that's really something that needs to be asked the customers, especially when they're leaving, because it forces them to remember why they subscribed in the first place. And it's a good thing to know your weaknesses, but also your strength. And I think it's really interesting to know that. So, and it doesn't cost a lot to ask them in the survey, as you were saying, Ekaterina, or during the support phase, or reading the reviews on the store. And I think, as you mentioned, it's something everybody should do, no matter the scale or the size of the company.
I completely agree. I think that's also a great tip that you mentioned from Patrick Campbell, I believe, the CEO.
Yep.
Sounds super helpful. I also think doing exactly this and checking out how exactly users talk about us while leaving the reviews, how they refer to the product, how they describe it, what are the benefits, was also super helpful to us because it also helps you come up with a lot of ideas for paid user acquisition. We can pretty much take the quotes. You can use exactly the same language that your users are using when leaving reviews. And because you know that in this case, it's way more likely to resonate with them, like to resonate for acquiring the new users too. So yeah, there's so many angles that are really helpful there.
But there's more and more talk about retention. That's getting more and more important these days. Can you tell us why it's getting more important? And then, you know, what can people do to optimize retention for their app?
Yeah, of course. I have to say I'm a bit biased here because I'm a huge believer in the freemium model. I also understand why not everybody can afford doing that. I understand that not every startup and not every founder can actually rely on some users converting in the future. And a lot, that's why a lot of them prefer to go for a more aggressive type of monetization. But I think this has so much value in it because first, it helps your users to create a habit before they even pay, which makes them less likely to churn in the future. There are also, of course, as long as the user is retaining and is active in the product, there are more and more opportunities to convert the user for you. And especially for apps that are powered by content and viral loops, it also decreases the friction and it helps you to keep this loop spinning because every new happy user can potentially bring some more. So that's why I would say, yeah, retention is critical. And of course, like freemium model helps a lot with that. It just does a lot of heavy lifting for you already if the product is good. But when it comes to ways to optimize it, I think not much is changing here these days. Like a lot has to do with communication, lifecycle marketing, right messaging at the right time to keep reminding the users of the value that they're getting out of the product. First, to help bring them to the aha moment, so to improve activation. Activation fuels retention. Retention fuels monetization. And this is like how it pretty much goes. So one of the levers here can, of course, be improving your push notification prompt at the beginning, also figuring out the right time to show it and the right layout, the right design and the call to action around it, and then doubling down on push notifications and emails on top of that. Also, I see a lot of examples these days, but I personally have not tried anything in this regard yet, is also using the artificial intelligence for more personalized communication and for pretty much integrating it into your workflows so that every customer starts getting way more personalized messaging built around their behavior in the product. So yeah, this gets to value nurturing. Because I also noticed that very often, and I also made these mistakes myself in the past, even if you do all of this, you might still see significant churn. You might still see users churning, not renewing subscriptions. Mm-hmm. It means that you're probably not really communicating the progress that your users are making in the product also at the right time. That's why they tend to forget about it. They tend to forget where they started and have a solid comparison as to where they are at the moment to see how much value they actually already got out of your product. So having some kind of overviews of that in the product, in the profile sections that can be shared also maybe on social media and make it a little bit more rewarding can also even help with this.
Yeah, there's also something that few app developers do is promoting the evolution of the subscriptions. Because when you're subscribing to something and you stay a year, the product continues evolving and new premium features add on, and you maybe not, well, you won't be promoting them. For example, and a great example for that is, for example, Apple Music. They launched this new karaoke feature, and when I opened Apple Music, I saw directly a banner promoting this new feature, which, well, I will be using, but I know that because I love karaoke. To be fair, it's pretty Wow, it's an amazing feature. but it's something that we rarely see in applications. Like, well, we've developed that new feature. We just put it on the side and we don't even know, because if I'm subscribed, I don't even know if I wasn't like a subscriber. And now included in your premium package, you get this new feature and you get an onboarding on that new feature, really helps the customer know that the value of his subscription is growing, you know. And for sure, the progress that you've made, all the achievements, everything that you brought, especially when you're learning or when you're doing some practice and or sports or whatever, is important. But also all these new features that you might not be willing to promote your existing subscriber with is really important to leverage and improve your retention.
I totally agree, like 100%. I also think the newsletters on their own might not necessarily like cut it, but that's why, as you said, you can also use in-app messaging in order to announce those. You can use also push notifications. You can use other communication channels. I think also Apple introduced the in-app events last year, which can also be used for announcing the new features as well. So I think all of these channels can make a lot of sense for sure.
Great idea, the in-app events, indeed.
I call it a low input, potentially low output kind of tactic, because we did it at a certain point quite extensively. It really does not take too long to create an in-app event. I would not expect too much out of it, but it can give you quite significant awareness, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So the amount of impressions you get can be quite huge, but I just would not expect maybe too many installs from there. But it, again, for a 10 to 15 minute kind of effort, it's still worth it.
So you've shared a lot of answers, a lot of great thought with us. If our listeners want to learn more and hear more from you, where can they go?
Well, mostly LinkedIn, I would say. I'm trying to also be active on Twitter, but I have this fear of a blank page, and that's why I don't really post much there at the moment. So yeah, pretty much LinkedIn is the platform where I'm happy to chat about anything.
Okay. And if they want to learn about your class, where can they go?
My class is hosted on the Maven platform, and yeah, so this would be this is where the landing page was all the possible amount of text is describing the course in a lot of detail.
Okay. And if people come from the subscription league, can they get a discount or something?
Yeah, of course. For Purchasely fans, yeah, you can.
Yeah, Olivier wants to improve his web skills.
I'm on the mailing list. I'm receiving the emails.
Being a mobile developer is not enough. You want to be full stack, right?
Exactly.
So come on, we want a discount, Ekaterina.
No, of course. Yeah, you can use the code LEAK20 for like everybody who listens to the podcast and wants to join the course.
Okay, league, like subscription league.
League, exactly. Yeah.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah,
and make sure it lasts forever, because this episode is gonna be listened for years. I mean, there is great insight. I'm really happy about how to develop the testing culture, experimentation within a company. That's really, really a great valuable content. Thanks for sharing.
I'm really glad.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing this with us.
No, thanks. Thanks for inviting me. I was super happy to chat with you.
You're welcome.
On behalf of the Purchasely team, thank you for listening to the Subscription League podcast. If you've enjoyed what you heard, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or other audio platform. To find out more about Purchasely and how we can improve your subscription business, visit purchasely.com. Please hit subscribe in your podcast player and don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to previous episodes at subscriptionleague.com. See you soon!